are listening to KBUT Community Radio, 90.3 in Crested Butte, 88.9 in Gunnison, and worldwide at kbut.org. This is On the Record, heard every other Wednesday from noon to 2 p.m. We listen to some good tunes and we catch up with local nonprofits here in the Gunnison Valley. On this week's show, we're going to get to a little local history, and we have local historian Larry McDonald. You might recognize his name from the history columns published in the Gunnison Country Times, and he also sits on the board of the Pioneer Museum in the city of Gunnison. With this month being Women's History Month, we're going to be talking about women here in the Gunnison Valley. Larry, thanks so much for joining us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
So for folks that don't already know you, can you give us a little personal history? How did you get into being a local historian?
Oh, well, I was born in Gunnison in 1958, and my father dragged me all over. He was an avid fisherman and hunter, and he dragged us children all over Gunnison County and to all the historical sites. While he was fishing, my mother and I and my sister, we would scavenge ghost towns in the area. And so that kind of piqued my interest early on. I graduated from Western State in 1986 with a degree in recreation and did a 30-year career in recreation management. I really got more interested in history when my father was writing a book on his Emory family history dating back to 1066 with William the Conqueror. Unfortunately, my father was diagnosed with cancer, and less than 2 weeks from his diagnosis, he passed away. And during that time, he asked my mother and I to finish the book on history. And that really got me interested in our family history. And that family history carried over to American history with our family arriving in 1625. You find that you're related to a whole lot of folks here. And then when I started volunteering at the Pioneer Museum about 6 years ago after retiring, I really was just amazed at the amount of history in Gunnison that I wasn't aware of. And being at the museum allowed me a lot of opportunities to discover and research more of that. And one of my first, when I lived up here in Crested Butte not that long ago, when they were dedicating the new memorial to the Jokerville mine victims, I noticed that they were missing some of the victims in there, and I found those victims in the cemetery, and I ensured that they were also recognized with the new memorial out there. And that was just one part of our intriguing history here in the Gunnison Valley.
Mm, wow. And for folks who don't know, can you remind them about the Jokerville mine?
The Jokerville mine, there actually never was a Jokerville mine. That was a local term that came about after the disaster occurred. It was actually the Colorado Coal and Iron Company mine at Crested Butte. That was the official name of the mine at that time. That occurred on January 26th, an explosion in the mine in 1884, killing 59 men and boys. And there was a number of boys that were teenagers, as young as 12 years old, that perished in that horrible accident that day. And only a handful of those are actually buried out here in the cemetery. Many of those were shipped back to their homes back east. The ones that were not, these were unclaimed victims that are buried in our cemetery out there for the most part. In that mass grave, those were all unclaimed miners there.
Wow.
And so most people don't realize, but that mine location is just right up the road as we start up Kebler Pass, right on the south side of the road right there. You can't find any remains of that mine today.
That's fascinating. Yeah. And so, like I mentioned, it is Women's History Month, and I had asked you to dig up some local history for women here in the Gunnison Valley. What did you find?
Not a whole lot, unfortunately. I found through my research of history, not only here in the Gunnison Valley, that when you're doing studies on women, it's much more difficult than the men, just because they were not recognized as much back then. And although we had over 50 different newspapers published in the Gunnison area, it's hard to come by stories on the ladies. They were definitely referred to as the wife of, right, or those few that didn't marry. You can manage to dig up them. It's a little easier to find information.
Yeah, no, I thought that was so interesting to point out that, you know, women's history is hard to dig up.
Not a lot of photos in collections. I mean, it was a male-dominated world in the late 1800s here.
Yeah. So what were you able to dig up?
Well, we can't really talk about our female history here in Gunnison County without first mentioning Chipeta, the wife of Chief Uray. Yeah. And she was born in 1843. And married, she wasn't the only wife of Chief Uray, but she was the most renowned wife of Chief Uray. And she was called the Queen of the Utes. She married when she was less than 20 years old there. And unfortunately, Uray passed in 1880, just after signing that final treaty that moved them from our Los Pinos Indian Reservation over towards the new reservation, which is located near Montrose. But she lived for 44 years after Chief Uray passed away. And during that time, a part of it, she returned to her native Ute roots, on occasion going back to live on a reservation in a tent. And then at other times, she would be feted a famous person quite often. So when the Gunnison Tunnel opened in 1906, she actually rode in the same car as President Taft during the grand opening ceremonies. And she was quite well known throughout the United States during that time. She had traveled back to Washington, D.C. and met presidents and other folks, celebrities. She was treated like a celebrity during her time in Washington and on occasion when she came back to Colorado. So we really can't skip over Chipeta. And she is well recognized at the Montrose Ute Museum with her own spring there. And she is actually buried. Her remains are there also. Mm. So we can't talk much about our history without mentioning her first. And then another renowned resident of our valley was Captain Ellen Jack. Hmm. And Captain Ellen Jack was quite an independent lady. Her husband had passed away, and he was a naval captain, and she took that title of captain on. She was a partner in the Black Queen Mine, which was located in Crystal near Marble.
Okay.
And she ended up selling that mine for $25,000 back in that day. And you can multiply that about 30 times to get an equivalent dollar amount for today. She was in Gunnison for a number of decades, and she ran a boarding house that right behind the current Gunnison Arts Center. She owned a half block back there, a boarding house and a restaurant. She named it Jack's Cabin, just to be confusing with the other Jack's Cabin, which was originally called Howville, which is between here and Almont. So Captain Ellen Jack was quite handy with a pistol. Whenever a fella tried to get fresh with Captain Jack, they might happen to lose a finger or two. Well, she was an excellent shot, very independent. There's a story of her coming over Schofield Pass into Crested Butte on her own in a blizzard.
Wow.
And that's how tough of a lady she really was. She had some run-ins with our law enforcement throughout the valley, but she was well respected. And she in the historic Gunnison newspapers, it indicates that she was very involved in beautification of the Gunnison Valley. She tore down shacks that were on her property and replaced them with new ones. And she was very involved in growing greenery around her residence there to help beautify Gunnison, which is a pretty neat deal.
Yeah.
She did leave Gunnison in the late 1800s, and she ended up living on High Drive in Colorado Springs for a long time, and it became a tourist destination where she would invite people to take pictures. She really was like a selfie queen way back in the early 1900s here.
Wow.
But Captain Ellen Jack, one of the most renowned women in Colorado history, was a resident of our valley also. Unfortunately, Miss Marcella Doyle comes up quite often, and she was one of the few survivors of the Woodstock avalanche that occurred 140 years ago this month near Pitkin, above Pitkin and below the Alpine Tunnel. That avalanche was triggered by trains leaving Woodstock heading up to the Alpine Tunnel, and the vibration in the deep snow triggered the avalanche, which roared down from above and wiped out the town of Woodstock. And Mrs. Marcella Doyle survived that while six of her children died, and they were ages 10 to 23, and they were all working at the boarding house and restaurant. The two oldest were boys, and they actually worked for the railroad at that time. And one of the boys was engaged to be married to Celine, another woman that did survive the avalanche. They had to dig out both her and Miss Marcella Doyle.
Wow.
13 people lost their lives there. They didn't find the two of the men until later that summer in June and July up there. Miss Marcella Doyle, survivor, she moved back to Golden, which was her original home, and lived out her life there. Another intriguing and infamous group of gals in our county history are the Vidal sisters. They were called the Girls in the Overalls, and they were featured in a 1902 silent short film. And this is at the very earliest days of motion pictures. And a gentleman, a Colorado native by the name of Harry Buckwalter, a famous photographer, he made one of his earliest motion pictures of these gals ranching. What had happened is their father had passed away with the ranch heavily in debt. Their ranch was up Ohio Creek Valley, and left them in debt. And mother passed away 2 years later, so they had no parents anymore. And the girls took on the duties of ranching, putting on overalls while wearing lipstick and fancy shoes. And the photo shoots and the film were all showing that they could be beautiful while still doing the hard work of ranching. And
that's
they
incredible.
Ended up selling the ranch a few years later.
Wow.
But their claim to fame was the early 1900s when their film was shown all over the United States and far beyond.
Yeah.
So, the Vidal sisters.
I mean, something that strikes me listening to all this history is that there's a lot of things that have changed, and there's some things that have remained the same. We still have women here in the valley taking selfies. We still have a lot of people focused on, you know, the aesthetics, the beautification, like you said, of the Gunnison Valley and how we can improve these things. We still have natural disasters. Really interesting.
Yeah, you find that things haven't changed as much as you really think they would have over time. But the women, they were very, very critical to the growth of the Gunnison Valley. In the earliest days, there wasn't a lot of females in the earliest days of settlement around 1880, but they came. And that's how Mrs. Annie Hagler came with her sister from Kansas. And they she got a job as our first deputy county clerk, Annie Hagler, in 1880-81. And soon she was discovered by our town founder, Gunnison's town founder, Alonzo Hartman.
Wow.
And it wasn't long before they were married, and they married back in Kansas where she was from. Annie Hagler Hartman, not only was she our first deputy county clerk, but she hosted in the beautiful Hartman Castle that we're working so hard to preserve, the Women's Sewing Circle, the Monday Afternoon Club, the Gunnison Women's Club, the Women's Missionary Society, and many other organizations were all hosted out at the Hartman Castle. And they didn't call it the Hartman Castle back then. It was Dos Rios Ranch during the time that they lived there. Not only that, but she was a noted artist and writer. She wrote many articles in our local newspapers and recipes. If you look in our historic newspapers, you can find a whole lot of recipes that Annie wrote and submitted into the newspapers. She also produced a number of nice artworks, and I don't know where they're at. We may have some at the museum. I wouldn't be surprised. But she was quite a gal, and she really supported everything that not only her husband, Alonzo Hartman, did, but her three children as well. She was really a matriarch of the Hartman family. When Western State came in existence in 1911, it was really devoted to teaching women to be teachers. And so there was a whole lot of educated women that made their way to Gunnison to become teachers. And one of those, one of our first professors at Western in 1914, they hired Lois Bertha Borland. And she immediately had an impact on the college. She launched the Top of the World newspaper, which was quite the feat. She also launched the one-act plays, and those were very popular back in the early days out there. In 1916, she had her students produce a booklet called Historical Sketches of Gunnison with a number of stories about Gunnison history. It's hard to find anybody that really started producing historical information before her. So she produced that Historical Sketches, which you could still find today, especially in our local libraries out there. She taught Sunday school, I found out. She loved to produce poultry. She raised poultry. She raised, she bred chickens that they would show at fairs and different competitions around there. And I also found information that she would go hunting on a regular basis with other folks. So,
I mean, all of this is so interesting to hear, you know, about the activities that they were doing. Because like I said, a lot of these things haven't changed very much, where we still hunt and fish and enjoy the great outdoors, or horseback riding, even women's groups. Is there anything that sticks out to you that kind of makes the Gunnison Valley more unique? You know, I know you mentioned being a history buff for American history and just history in general.
It's really the outdoor life. You know, it was no different then than it is today. These people, they wouldn't have stayed in our valley here if they really didn't enjoy the outdoors and really live within the outdoors. And believe me, they did it a lot more than we do today back then. You have to realize that we had dozens and dozens of ghost towns, Irwin and Ruby and White Pine and North Star, Virginia City and Hillerton. Those places, we don't access them today, but in back in the 1880s, people were living in those communities still, and they skied, and people thought, I've been scolded on Facebook posts where people think they didn't ski because they wanted to. They skied because they had to, but no, we know for sure with the Al Johnson uphill, downhill, that the competitions, they skied for fun too. They really did. And we do have a number of historical photos of people skiing recreationally in the 1880s.
That's incredible.
It is. They were tough. They had to be tough. Sleighing, you know, they didn't have the conveniences we do today, but they survived and they managed, and they loved living where they were living for the most part. They didn't enjoy when Irwin died such a quick death and they had to all move, you know, to Crested Buttes.
Right.
They really did enjoy living up there.
So that must have been a really interesting time, you know. Not as much development back then.
Right. But when you look at the early pictures of Irwin and how it boomed for that short time, it truly is amazing.
Yeah. Any other notable ladies that you found?
Well, there's another one that I don't want to skip over, and I really featured her last month during Black History Month, because people don't realize how much Black history we have in Gunnison. And it is extensive. It is really extensive. And one of our first renowned Black ladies was a lady named they called her Aunt Susan, Aunt Susan Bryan. And she was an enslaved lady that moved to Gunnison at an early age, and she lived near the La Vida Hotel, which is where our Black community really was back in the 1880s. But Aunt Susan Bryan had an extended family, and she took care of all of our local children for those families that could afford, and she did take care of the Hartman children. Many others. If they would go on vacation to the East Coast, she would usually travel with them to take care of the children while they were on vacation.
Wow.
So Aunt Susan Bryan, and when she passed away, the community got up a fundraising effort to put a headstone over her remains out at the Gunnison Cemetery.
Is that there to this day?
It is there to this day. It really is today. Yeah. So.
No, this is all so fascinating. I mean, it's a lot of tidbits that, you know, I haven't thought about in a while, but just the number of women that contributed to this community to get to where we are now.
And there's so much more.
Yeah.
And it just takes some time to go in and really research those early pioneer ladies. I use the Colorado Historic Newspaper collection, the digital collection, because it makes it so much easier to search. At the museum, we have thousands of editions of newspapers dating back to 1880, but very few of those have been digitized to date. And they're very fragile to work with, to do extensive research in. But their stories, the stories that are in there, there's so many other women that should be recognized in our valley.
Yeah. No, it's definitely one of my favorite things to go through the newspapers at the museum and just see, you know, like you said, older articles that were produced and how people were talking back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely fascinating.
It is.
Is there anything else you would like folks to know?
Oh, the Pioneer Museum will open for the 2024 season on May 15th, as we do every year. And we're open through the end of September, and we do encourage our local Valley residents to come by and possibly buy a membership so you can come and go as you please. We are open 7 days a week once we open, and we are open 9 to 5 every day during the summertime. We do have two new major exhibits that will be open to the public this summer, and one of those is the Gary Fabiano world's largest collection of Coors Breweriana.
Wow.
And whether or not you are a beer drinker or a Coors fan or not, you will not believe the extent of this collection. It is bigger than the Coors family's collection.
Wow.
It is bigger than the Coors factory's collection. It is amazing. The second newest exhibit we'll have is all the Masonic Lodge relics from Tin Cup, Crested Butte, and the Gunnison Masonic Temples. They've all closed now, and the Masons in Gunnison built a massive building on our campus to house those intriguing relics. And if you're not familiar with the Masonic rituals, what the collection would include is a number of very elegant robes.
Wow.
And jewelry. That was a big part of the Masonic's background. And so we'll have a huge building now that houses all those historic relics.
Oh, that's so amazing. Yeah.
And we have over 40 buildings now on our 14-acre campus, and we grow considerably every year with the number of donations that come to us. There's also another building that should open sometime this summer. It's called the Bryles Military Figurine and Accessory Collection. And it's over 3,000 military figurines the size of your Barbie or G.I. Joe doll.
Wow.
And they're all in different costuming. And some of these might be like George Washington figurines and all through history. So it's really something else.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here first. The Gunnison Pioneer Museum officially opens their doors Wednesday, May 15th. The museum is located at 803 East Tamichi Avenue in the city of Gunnison. It's often referred to as the Smithsonian of the West. You can learn more at GunnisonPioneerMuseum.com. Larry, thanks so much for coming in and joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
It's been a pleasure. And you are listening to On the Record. I'm Kate Ganap. Thanks for tuning in. And in case you were just tuning in, we will have this posted on our website as well, and you can listen to the full interview. Don't go anywhere. We have got some music coming your way.